Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Clones, we are live in Minneapolis for Super Bowl week, which means we've got a week packed full of interviews from Radio Row leading up to a live show on Super Bowl Sunday from Target Field. This is one of the biggest weeks of the year in the jungle, and if you can't listen on the radio or peep the simulcast, we've got you covered. The Daily Jungle from Minneapolis starts right now. We ordinarily would not get access to, and they sit here right on the set. I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm joined right now by an 11-year NFL vet. He is a TV host. He is an author. He is an activist. He is an entrepreneur. He was a national champion at Michigan, three-time All-Big Ten player, 177th pick overall in the year 2000, and appearing courtesy of Bank of America. I guess what I'm saying is this dude is like the most interesting man in the world.
That was the best introduction that I think I've had since I've been on Radio Row right here in Minneapolis.
No, since the last time you saw me, Dahani.
Yeah, you're exactly right. My bad.
Dahani Jones. What's up, man?
All praise to the godfather, Jim Rome.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate being on your show.
Finally, the respect I deserve.
I give you respect. Every time that we've had a conversation, it's always been a great one, and I've always appreciated you allowing me to be on your show.
No, I appreciate that, because you are, and I mean this, one of the most interesting guys that I ever get a chance to talk to, so I always look forward to it. Now, it's been 13 years since you played for the Eagles against the Patriots in the Super Bowl. You're a guy who looks ahead, but let me get you to look back for a minute. What do you remember most about that day?
The crazy thing about the Super Bowl is that it's so big and it's so much energy that you can't remember all of the specific points of it, right? I remember T.O. and I remember all the fanfare around him, and he broke his leg and then he came back. I remember him practicing without spikes, right? He didn't have any cleats. He would practice in flats. And I've never seen that before. But he used to do all those different eccentric and exotic workouts in order to keep his body in pristine fashion. And then all of a sudden in the game, he exploded out of the gates. And I think he had like 120 yards. And that was probably one of the biggest highlights. I do remember this, that halftime was unusually long.
Right, right.
I think Beyonce just kept performing for longer and longer and longer. So I remember that. And I remember
Was
losing.
That a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah, at the time? I wish I got to see her.
Yeah, right.
And I think we got to see a little bit, especially when we went back out onto the field. But it was a great game. And, you know, we didn't lose by a lot. But it seems like as I continually talk to more people on Radio Row about it, we lost by like 20. We lost by 3. Give us a break.
Yeah, you ever notice, though, it's almost like better not to go than to go and lose, because then you're not the second best team in the NFL, you're the worst team in the NFL.
Exactly. I mean,
it's so twisted and so backwards, but that's the way it feels.
You're first loser.
Right.
And then you get home, and I mean, look, we're in Philadelphia, and people are emotional. And so, you know, you walk up the field, and you see all this, you know, paper falling from the sky, and it's beautiful, and you realize that you're going to walk right past the stage, of which Brady's going to get his Lombardi trophy. You're going to go right into the locker room, go jump on a bus and come home. But I will say this, the Philadelphia fans did greet us when we got back home, and they were supporting us, albeit that we lost. The Philadelphia Eagle fans have always been able to back people.
Dahani Jones joining me on the set. One thought about T.O., you know, when you lay it out like that, this guy had a busted leg. He's out there without cleats. He shows up and on the biggest stage shows out as well. What was he like as a teammate?
The same way he is now. You know, he's a dynamic guy. He walked right past me. I was like, "What's up, T.O.?" And he was like, "What's up, bro?
Come on, man."
He just kept walking. But that's T.O.'s mystique. That's the way that he's always been. And I think that as a player, you grow up a certain way. You play a certain way. You have a certain type of dynamic. You have a certain type of bravado. You got to carry that, right? That's what makes you invincible on the field, right? And I think a lot of people don't understand as a professional athlete, everybody's trying to break you in some way. So the way you can find something to make yourself unbreakable, that's how you last long. That's why Tom Brady's so good.
Why? Explain that. I mean, like, we're talking about armor, right? When you get up in the morning,
that's that TV
you
got
to put on your armor,
You put on that armor. I mean, Brian Dawkins did it the best. He was Wolverine. If people would have seen him go through his sort of transformation in the locker room, in the shower, he would go through this thing. I don't even know what you would call it. He just becomes Wolverine. Some people just live it their entire life. They do it all the time. I think Tom, he lives a certain way when he's off the field, especially around TB12, and he's able to sort of make his body more efficient. And when he gets onto the field, he's able to leverage that coat of arms in order to become, you know, and to be the best quarterback of all time.
Dude, I'm going to tell you how good you are. There's so many things I want to talk to you about, but you keep saying interesting things, and I keep following in that direction. Just one thing about Doc. I mean, dude, this guy was unbelievable. The way he could lay the wood, the way he could change the game. In fact, you tell me, could that guy change the game with a single hit that would affect both sides of the ball?
Well, that was why I was thinking it was so strange for them to let go of him when he was at Philadelphia and send him over to Denver. That was weird to me because of the fact that he not only transformed himself, he transformed everybody that played on the team. Jim Johnson gave him the keys to the defense and made sure that him and Jeremiah Trotter were the leaders, right? Those are the guys that we followed. I mean, I was a young cat, right? I was probably 25 playing in the Super Bowl. I mean, albeit I played in the Super Bowl many times, going to the greatest university in the world, University of Michigan.
Of course.
So I was used to the big stage. I mean, this is nothing to me. Look at the Mall of America. This is beautiful.
This is nothing, man.
It's nothing. You know, 100,000 people.
Stuff
I see
like
them
this
all
when
the
you
time.
In fifth grade, right?
Right. You know, I grew up with this. But, you know, Brian Dawkins, he was just a different type of guy.
Huh. Listen, you when you talked about T.O., you said it's just the way you're brought up. As an example, you and I could spend the whole interview talking football, but I would miss an opportunity. You were a Montessori kid. You were a Montessori kid. There was a moment a while back when you were at Powder Mountain, you're riding in a van, there's fog on the window, and you start drawing into the fog. A woman who was in the van saw you and asked you
how
if
do you remember
were a
this
Montessori
story?
Kid. What was your reaction in that moment, and then what does being a Montessori kid mean to you?
Well, the reaction in the moment, I was like, how in the world did you determine that I was a Montessori kid by virtue of me drawing some picture into some fog on the window? And that moment single-handedly sort of changed the way that I thought about myself growing up, right? When I was on the Giants, Tom Olivadotti, I don't know if you remember him.
Sure.
He was linebacker coach.
Yeah.
He was also defensive coordinator of Miami Dolphins. And he would get on me all the time. He was like, Donnie, you ask too many questions. You know, you keep bothering me. You keep asking me all these questions. Stop challenging authority. Just do what I tell you to do. And I never understood why that got me into so much trouble, right? Even when I was at University of Michigan, you know, Jim Herman, who's a linebacker coach now, he would always get mad at me because I would ask so many questions. And then all of a sudden, in that moment, everything crystallized.
Right, right.
Because it was like, Montessori, you're taught to explore. You're taught
to ask questions.
You're taught to challenge authority. And I realized my childhood had determined the outcome of these moments when I got into these disputes. So that's a part of how I was brought up. It's not my fault, coach.
Listen, I mean, it's kind of comical, right? What was the reaction of coaches when you asked questions? And what kind of questions were you asking that set them off like that?
Well, I was just diving into the details.
The scheme, right?
I actually had a book, right? So Coach Olivadotti wouldn't answer all of my questions, so I actually created the book of questions. And so during the meetings, I would just write down the question. No, like, I don't understand. Why does the defensive end have to come all the way across the face of the guard in order to allow me a path through the B gap? Why can't he scrape on the inside of the B gap off the guard in order to sort of get his shoulder to turn? Right? Little idiosyncrasies like that. So
sure.
I would give him the book at the end of practice or at the end of our meeting, and then he would return him back. By the time the end of the season got around, he was like, you know what, forget the book of questions. Just ask me the questions in the meeting.
Right.
Because I don't want homework.
Dude, he could have saved himself a whole lot of trouble by just answering
exactly.
the question.
Exactly.
There are no, you know, like, there are no dumb questions, but in that world, there are no questions.
There are no
questions.
Don't
ask anything. Just do your job. Listen, few players in NFL history, really the history of any sport, have transitioned into life the way you have after the game. When did you first start thinking about your life after football, and how did you lay the groundwork for the next chapters?
Well, I think when I first started playing football, I never knew how long I was going to be able to play the game in the first place. I wanted to become a doctor. My mother is a physician, so I went to the University of Michigan in hopes to become a physician. And I still remember to this day, my senior year, when Zeus, or Eric Mays is his real name, he's a PhD now, he said, you know, you're a baller, and I didn't even know what that meant. And after that, I got drafted and I started playing football, but I think that the transition had always been a part of my plan because, you know as well as I do, regardless if you're in film and television, if you're in football or entertainment, if you're in the world of business, you can get hired and fired today or the next day. So you always got to be thinking about what else is going on. Now, you don't want to commit 95% of your time to doing so because obviously then you'd have one foot out all the time, right? So I would always allow myself 5%, 10% of my time to think about what would my transition look like, prepare in the way that allows me to be successful as possible. And I remember Michael Strahan always said, say please and say thank you and remember all the people that took care of you because they're off the field right now, preparing in the same way that you are. who knows what will happen in the transition, whether it's for you or whether it's for other people.
And look at Stray. The Daily Jungle is brought to you by Kalo. Kalo Rings, now one of our sponsors. They're made from silicone, and they are perfect for when you can't wear your traditional wedding rings. I see athletes, military members, and construction workers, even mechanics, all wearing them. You can find one in every color, and they have them both for men and for women. Find them at Dick's Sporting Goods, Bass Pro Shops, Academy Sports, or online at Kalo.com. That's Q-A-L-O.com. That's Kalo. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Dahani Jones joining us. Now, you've traveled the globe. You've experienced a lot of different things. I've had guys like Calais Campbell tell me that running out of the tunnel before the Super Bowl is one of the most overwhelming experiences of his entire life. I mean, to the point where he couldn't breathe. What was that moment like for you? Was it like the most exhilarating moment, or have you found things off the field that equaled or surpassed that?
No, the Super Bowl is one of the greatest stages of all time, and I remember coming out of the tunnel and the fanfare, and I couldn't believe, you know, just the energy in the room. But as soon as it was the greatest moment, it was also the longest moment.
Yeah.
Because when you come out of the tunnel, there's a certain clock that starts in your head, right? It's 2 minutes. We'll just take an arbitrary number. And then you're counting down to the time of kickoff. And I think that one of the things that I always talk about going into this Super Bowl and why the Patriots have an edge, albeit I want the Eagles to win, is their experience. They have an understanding of what that clock is. It's not 2 minutes.
Right.
The clock is like five.
They know the clock.
They know the clock. So when I got to the sideline after being so excited about being on the field, then all of a sudden my energy level just started to drop and drop and drop.
You crash,
right? It's like you have this caffeine high, and then all of a sudden you get on the field and you're like, okay, we're about to play. No, they go through the national anthem. They go through all these other different things. And that's one of the biggest points of differentiation when it comes to somebody that's played in the Super Bowl, you know, 25 times versus someone that's only played in the Super Bowl, what, it's been a really long time.
Right. All right, listen, I don't have time to fully get into this, but I need to own something with you. As the leader of the Bowtie Revolution, you were right. I was wrong. That thing has blown up completely.
There's bow ties everywhere.
Man, I know, dude. I could not. Look, I've been wrong about a lot of things, but I thought I'd be right about that, and I was wrong, man. You were the leader of that revolution. You were leading from the front, so you were right, and I was wrong. You're working with Bank of America this week. Break it down for me. What are you doing for them?
Well, I'm trying to take care of everybody that's out here at the Mall of America in and around Minneapolis. I think one of the toughest things right now is managing money and making sure people pay you back. Right, friends and family loan 20, 30, 100 bucks, and then they don't pay the money back, and then all of a sudden you lose a friend. So with the Bank of America mobile banking app featuring Zelle, you can do that securely. You can do it easily. And a matter of fact, if you take your phone out and you just do it right now, you can pay me that 20 bucks
owe me. I don't owe you anything other than an apology for the Bowtie Revolution. Man, how many people owe you money right now?
A lot of people owe me money, but I probably owe some other people money,
will
too.
Will the app fix that?
The app will definitely fix me paying someone back.
Now, what if I loan the money before I downloaded the app? Can I still get my money back?
You can still get your money back. Just download the app and then get them to do the same thing, and then you can guys figure it out.
Herman Moore is my guest. Herman, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thank you for having me.
It is good to see you. Thanks so much. It is Super Bowl week, and you know how much the Lions mean to Detroit and how loyal those fans are. In fact, I don't know if fans know this, that's a great football town.
Absolutely.
A great football town. What would it mean to that city and that fan base to see them make a deep run in the postseason, maybe get to the Super Bowl?
Well, first of all, if we make it to the Super Bowl, I think that becomes a holiday.
Yeah, right.
So I think they'll give everyone in Michigan the day off. That becomes a work holiday. It would be tremendous. It's a sports town. You have the Pistons, you have the Red Wings, you have the Tigers. You have teams that understand championships, and then the only one that's still remaining is the Lions. So if they're able to win a Super Bowl or go deep into the playoffs, it's just going to rejuvenate that fan base that's been so loyal over decades without championships.
They are, too. I think that because the team has now a lot of success, people don't understand this. It is a great football town. It's a great football town. They want it. Now, you had a taste. You reached the NFC title game in your rookie season. I'm not going to say that it was easy because nothing is, but when you get there that early, do you just logically start to think, I'm going to get back there next year. I'm going to get to the Super Bowl. We're going to make lots of deep runs.
It being that we were a young team and we were able to make it to the division championship game, the conference championship game against Washington Redskins, we thought we were going to be that team because this was going to be a unit that was going to stay together for quite some time. When that didn't occur and we started making still the playoffs, we had some up and down seasons in between, but six times you make the playoffs in that decade, and you don't go to the Super Bowl, you don't go back to the NFC champion, conference championship. So it starts to bring that team and pull it apart. So it became a team that, that had the talent and could have done more but didn't.
All right, so it starts to bring the team or pull the team apart, but does it also develop kind of a mindset that, hey, we just want to make the postseason. We're not grinding to get the home field. We're not grinding to go the distance, but we're pretty good making the postseason. Was that the mindset, and then what's that do to a locker room?
It does. I think it lowers the bar and you set yourself up for failure, because if you're saying, hey, we just want to get to the postseason, that's really what we did.
Right.
I think our mindset was, hey, let's just get to the playoffs. We get to the playoffs, we're going to be able to take care of business from there. No. You have to look beyond that and say, you know what, we got to get better position in the playoffs. We got to be getting those bye games and having home field advantage. Those are the chemistry, and those are the ingredients that makes for a championship football team.
Herman Moore joining me on Radio Row here in Minneapolis. Now, when you came into the league, you were thought of as a tweener, you know, between a tight end and a wide receiver. So when you first got there, what was the perception about big wide receivers?
That they were slow, that they didn't really have the finesse or the ability to run those shorter routes, those smaller routes. We had to be just kind of the post-up guy. You throw up the ball, and they make plays like that. When he started realizing we could actually, with athleticism, we had speed, we had ability, especially I was a hands catcher. You had Ed McCaffrey, Jake Reed. You had all these guys that were coming in and starting to make an impact later on. They started to see there were matchup problems, that the defensive backs could not keep up with these big physical wide receivers that could run, that had good hands, and then also that could go up and elevate and catch the football.
All right, so the perception started to change about the position, and then the game started to change. All right, now you have no control over when you enter the world, Herman. You know, if you had been born 15 years later, it might have been different. But as you watch the game right now and you see the rule changes right now, how different would it be for you to play right now as opposed to then?
Well, I definitely wouldn't fear the middle as much as a lot of us did back then. I mean, that was just a place you didn't want to track too much.
Can I stop you right there? What was it like back in the day going over the middle, and who were some of the guys that were waiting for you there that you thought about the most?
Listen, you got a badge of honor if you were catching passes over the middle, because that was a place that not many coaches only sent certain players there. They knew had that mental toughness, that had the ability to say, okay, there's opportunity, but this player is not going to let me down. I know that as we start to go, the mentality started to change a little bit, and they said, okay, these rules came into play. If it was today, there's so many ways you just kind of envy what they're able to get away with nowadays. And it is, I think it's done for a right reason. You don't want defenseless players getting hit. But at the same time, for guys like us who had to kind of go through that and do the 5-yard anything goes rule when you're going underneath and a linebacker can take you out at any given moment, those are tough. It's tough to watch, but at the same time, like I said, I think it's good for the game.
In other words, where were those rules when you were going over the middle? When you were going over the middle, who were some of the fiercest guys waiting for you?
Whether it be Atwater, maybe waiting. Dawkins may be waiting for you. You may have John Lynch, you know, like I said, waiting for you. You got Ronnie Lott, who was near the end of his career, but still, he was Ronnie Lott.
Eric Turner
over in Cleveland. Yes, absolutely. So, I probably can't name them all, but, you know, Carnell Lake, who wasn't really that physical guy, but he was a smart safety. So there was a lot of guys that, unfortunately, you look at and go, man, these are guys that could do some real damage.
Herman Moore did it back in the day when he went over the middle. Listen, what about guys like today? When you look at a guy, say, Antonio Brown, what do you think?
I really like the fact that he's made a position available again to smaller wide receivers. I think everyone started to covet those big, fast-running wide receivers. Antonio Brown showed that if you have the heart and you have the ability and the skill set, you can still compete against the bigger corners by being quick in space and being able to outrun them. I like the fact that you look at a guy like Julio Jones, right? He's not overly tall, but he's big, he's physical, he's fast. So there's these hybrid guys that you get a different mixture of guys based on your team, and you got to figure out how to take advantage of their skill set.
All right, in terms of the Lions, what did you think of their decision to move on from Jim Caldwell?
I like Jim.
Yeah,
I really did. He was a guy that I thought, when you talk about keeping off-field problems to a minimum, keeping problems within the locker room to a minimum, Jim Caldwell did that. He instilled a certain character and characteristic of his team and his players and expectation and accountability. Hated to see him go. However, now the Lions are looking at how do we change the culture, the mindset that we talked about earlier, to where it's not just the playoffs. And that's not Jim Caldwell's thinking. He wanted higher. But how do we now go, that is the benchmark. Anything less than that is a failure.
And listen, every time there's a coaching change, that's the first thing you hear. We need to change the culture. Then they talk about the process, trust the process. How do you change a culture? How long does that take, and how do you do that?
Well, you come in from day one, and you say, right now, the playoffs is failure. Going to the playoffs is a failure. We're here to win championships. We're here to win Super Bowls. And if you're not committed to that and doing what you need to do in the offseason, what you need to do when it comes to when we practice, when we play, not taking plays off, that's the kind of mentality, that's the type of vernacular you have to be able to talk to the players about, and that has to be the only thing that's talked about. Anything less than that, you don't fit.
Would you have those conversations as a wide receiver? And there's some teams where a wide receiver is a leader, if not the leader. But being who you were, if you saw something like that in that locker room, could you pull a guy aside and say, hey, man, you're not getting it done?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We had that type of setup. We had that type of mentality. The other thing is you had to also be the leader on the field. You got to make plays. We've seen how guys get on the sideline and they're trying to talk to other players and players are ignoring them. Because if you are not taking care of it and you're not getting it done, nobody's going to listen. So it's lead by example.
All right, Herman, you're appearing courtesy of Quick Lane Tire and Auto Center. What are you doing with those folks this week?
Well, it's been a really great relationship. I come from a military family, and they are doing a tremendous job of giving back to our military veterans, our men and women who have served our country, by providing $10,000 scholarships to 5 deserving veterans. They've been doing this for the last, we're going into the 3rd year of this, trading one uniform for another, which helps them with the transition from the military life back over to civilian life. And by providing this, it goes towards an automotive maintenance and repair certification, and it allows them a different way to jumpstart their lives when they get back here, so they don't have to struggle and figure out, what do I do next? And that's sometimes difficult for a lot of our men and women.
We've got a few moments, so I'm going to take advantage of that right now. Travis, nice to have you on the show. How are you?
A little chilly, and we're running around trying to stay on time here. But other than that, I'm all good. How about yourself, Jim?
My man, I'm doing the exact same way, except I made it to the mall. Dude, if you get here, it is really warm. It's like a sauna here, so it's much better on the inside than it is the outside. But I'll take it any way I can get it. Hey, listen, let me ask you something. Players play, coaches coach, management does, well, what management does. What was your reaction when you found out that Alex Smith had been traded to Washington? What was the first thing that went through your mind?
Obviously, I was upset to hear that, you know, Alex was gone. I'm still trying to find words for it, to be honest. It's a new situation for me. Ever since I came into this league, Alex has been my guy. You know, you couldn't say Travis Kelce without saying Alex Smith's name, and I certainly owe a lot of my success to him. So it's a little awkward and a little different for me. Knowing that I haven't dealt with this before, and knowing that I've never really gotten into a huddle with a different quarterback.
You know, it's a really candid response, and I appreciate it. Would you have liked to see him get another shot, another year?
Yeah, without a doubt. I played my tail off for Alex, and we came up short. Unfortunately, I feel like I had a lot to do with that last game and not being able to play in the second half. I feel like I owe that to Alex, is to get him all the success in the world, or at least try and help him get to that point. And it's frustrating knowing that we won't have that ability. So it's also on the flip side, it's exciting opportunity for the Chiefs. I think the expectations went from you kind of know what Alex can do. To a lot of questions with Pat, you know, or at least a lot of kind of just not really knowing where this thing's going to go. I mean, you have a lot of high expectations for him, and definitely has the upside to be one of the greats in the league. But I mean, it's still a question of how is he going to grow with this team and how we're going to work. And you know, the leaders on this team are going to try and make that easy on him, myself included.
Travis Kelce joining us right now. In fact, what about that? I mean, it means that Patrick Mahomes is going to get his shot. He's going to be a starting quarterback going forward. So what have you seen from him so far, and how do you think he'll do as the leader of that offense?
I think he will flourish, man. I've said that since day one, meeting him. He's a good dude, quite the character. He meshes well. He's a relatable guy. I think that's huge in being a quarterback, being able to relate to everybody on the offense. And you want to play with him. He has a competitive edge, and and a competitive mindset on every single snap to be able to, you know, put the ball in the end zone. And he has the arm to be able to do that anywhere on the field, whether we're on the 15 or the 20 and going in, or we're on the opposite end and we're backed up. He has the arm strength to be able to put that ball anywhere.
Travis Kelce joining me for a few more moments. You know, you mentioned what it was like, and on some level, hey, listen, nobody would say this is on you. You had a concussion. There's concussion protocol. You couldn't go back in that game, but you said on some level you felt responsible and that you couldn't be out there with Alex Smith and everybody else battling. What's it like in that second half when you've put in the time you've put in, everybody wants it so badly, they just don't look like the same team without you? What was it like to have to watch that and not be able to go in there and rejoin that fight?
I'm not going to lie. I didn't watch it. I was going through the protocol and everything, and they wanted to get some MRIs on my neck and just to make sure everything was, or some x-rays on my neck and some MRIs on me. So I was going through the whole protocol stuff, and I got out of an MRI machine, and there was the last drive, and I saw that we were down a point. And at that point, there was still hope left because I hadn't really seen the team struggle all day, but it was upsetting seeing how it ended like that. And it was, I'm still lost for words for it. It's frustrating knowing that, you know, we were up 18 before I came out.
Willie McGinnis, the pride of Long Beach, Pauly. You can see him throughout the NFL networks. More than 85 hours of live Super Bowl week coverage. And on Super Bowl Sunday, a special 8.5-hour edition of NFL Network's NFL Game Day Morning starting at 9 a.m. Eastern. Willie McGinnis, my guest.
Man, that was a great introduction, man.
Oh,
you're the
man.
Best.
Dude, tell you something, man. You've lived a great life. Man, a great football life and a great life in general.
Thanks,
how you feeling?
I feel great, man. It's good to be here. It's a great atmosphere, and it's always great to. We've been doing this for years now, man. You've been allowing me to be a part of you and what you've done, and I appreciate it. So it's good to be here.
Well, I appreciate you too. I you know, in fact, I've mentioned it before, but I can remember. I think in Miami, I'm coming off the set. I'm walking down the street, and I hear this, Jim, and I look over. Damn, is that Willie McGinnis talking to me? And nothing but respect. But you and I have done this for so long,
right,
for so many years. And I'm telling you, man, the longer I'm in this game, the more I appreciate those relationships.
Appreciate you, man.
You may not be old enough yet, but when you get to be where I'm sitting, actually, you probably do understand already, right?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely, man. They're everything. And this started when I was out of SC. So it was at a young age, man. And I respect those who are really, really good in the game. And you've been stellar throughout your entire career.
Willie McGinnis, I appreciate you, man. Thank you for saying that.
All right, now the bro love is over.
All right, now the bro love is over. Let's get to football. Hey, you want to talk about pro or bro love? I talked to Travis Kelce on the show a few moments ago, and I'm telling you, he sounded like he was in shock. Maybe he shouldn't have been, but he made it very clear. I'm excited about the future, but, man, that was my guy. Alex Smith was my guy. We came in together, and I'm having a hard time with this right now. What was your reaction when you heard about that deal?
Well, you kind of knew it coming into the season. Alex Smith had said some things and had some rumblings about probably not being there. Because when you move up, I don't know, what was it, 15 or 17 spots to get Mahomes, you kind of figured the writing is on the wall. And then he came out, and he made a great campaign for why in the league for so long. But at the end of the day, you got to realize there's two sides of this. You have relationships and you want guys to be in a certain place, but it's also a business side to it. And if you're Kansas City, you'd be like, hey, we've had success. We love this guy. He's great guy on and off the field, but we got to get over this hump. And we've drafted this young guy, and we figure this young guy has what it takes. And when you make major decisions like that, it does affect a lot of people. But at the end of the day, from a business standpoint, they figured that going forward, Patrick Mahomes gives them the best opportunity to probably win football games.
And by the way, you got to find out, right?
You got
to
see
that draft pick. You have to see.
Yeah.
But you know, Travis Kelce also said the thing about Alex Smith is he had a great year this year.
He did.
You knew exactly what you were going to get and have with him. Now you might say, right? But where did we get, or how far did we go? You don't know that about Mahomes. I mean, you never really know, right? So if you're in that locker room right now, what's going through your mind?
Well, they know. The players know because they see him practice. The coaches know because they have him in the meeting rooms and they're study quizzing him on what's going on and incorporating him in those game plans and situations and seeing how he's going to respond. They do a lot of intel when they draft him into a system and he's allowed to play for a year. coaches kind of figure it out. They see him more than we do. We talk about it once we see him during the games, but they got him in practice, OTAs, camp, summer, in practice doing certain plays, backing up, not getting a lot of snaps, but you understand. And then on the other hand, you mentioned Alex Smith. I think what Kelce is saying, you know what you get from him. It's consistency. You know he's going to take care of the ball. You know he's going to give you an opportunity to win. You know he's a great guy. And you know he's going to be ready, you know, and prepared for games. So if you're on that staff, it's a tough evaluation. But there's a decision that needed to be made.
Willie McGinnis joining me. He's working with NFL Network all week long. All right, so Willie, Washington had a similar evaluation. They made their evaluation.
Yeah.
They moved on from Kirk Cousins. They bring in Alex Smith. And again, they're there. They're with these guys. They're seeing these guys. What do you make of their evaluation? Are they demonstrably better at quarterback now than they were 24 hours ago?
I wouldn't say demonstrably. I'd say it was – I think this was a money trade, too,
yeah.
When you look at it. I mean, you save, what, almost $14 million? You can't pay Kirk Cousins $30-something million. You know, there's only so many times you can franchise them. I said this before the season. They wanted to know, regardless of his play, would he remain in Washington? And I said probably not, because if he wanted to be in Washington, there's probably a deal that probably would have gotten done way early on. And these players want security. They want consistency. They want to feel like you want him. And I think early on he probably didn't feel that. But it was warranted by the Washington Redskins. You look at Kirk Cousins and what he's done over his career as a starter there, basically a 500 quarterback. You know, he's had some good numbers. He throws for a lot of yards and different things. And we get caught up, right, Jim, in yards and statistics. But when you really break it down, when you're not winning football games and you're playing from behind, you're going to have yards, drawing yards. You're going to have numbers because you're always trying to play catch-up. So when you break the game down a certain way, you look at certain things, not from what he did at the end of the year, but why did he have to do certain things. And I think he's a talented guy. And the market dictates that these guys that are, I don't know, second, third-tier type quarterbacks, they demand a certain amount of money, regardless of what you are. So you'll start to see these type of guys, paychecks, that are bigger than Peyton Manning's was, Drew Brees, who's still playing, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, all these great quarterbacks that are still playing the game. You'll start to see these type of contracts kind of pretty much morph those.
Timing. It's all about timing.
It is.
Willie McGinnis joining me. Speaking of timing, it's Wednesday of Super Bowl week. You've gone through this as a player. What was your mood like by the time you got to Wednesday? Were you anxious to get that game going and were you ready to play right then? Or were you generally used to the flow of the week?
You're saying that from an experienced group of guys that seems like they go to the Super Bowl, what is it, every 3.5 years or whatever?
Sure, they know.
So they understand it. But as a player, you love the fact that now on Wednesday you can get back to your routine, right? Your media obligations, opening night, all those things are done. Certain players will get pulled away to talk to media and have certain obligations. But now it's back to football. We get to go back to football practices, our normal routine, like a weekly routine. Wednesdays we incorporate in the run game and short yardage and all those different things. Thursday, 2-minute and all that. Friday, we kind of put it all together. And Saturday's that walkthrough, that last kind of snapshot of what we're going to do going into the game, and then Sunday is game day. So you as a player, you kind of relieved because now you can get back to normal programming.
Yeah, you get to practice. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, hey, dude, let's practice.
Right.
When is everybody happy to go to practice? Wednesday of Super Bowl week, right?
Yep.
Listen, the last time the Patriots played the Eagles, you were in that game in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You guys busted out the Cali front.
The Cali front. You like that.
I see
you smiling.
I love the Cali front. You know I love the Cali front. What was it, and how did that differ from the regular defense?
It was a variation from like a 43 front. And, of course, the Cali came from me because I was from Cali. But they used me and Mike Vrabel in different positions because we're versatile linebackers. So instead of the traditional 3-4, they put me, my hand in the dirt. They kind of stacked. They brought an extra D lineman, and they stacked Vrabel as like a stacked linebacker. And we wanted to confuse them. They hadn't seen that for a long time. They saw a variation from it. McNabb comes up to the line. He's looking. He doesn't see the 3-4 immediately. Boom, burns that timeout to figure out what we're doing. And that's the Patriots. They're going to give you something different. You give them 2 weeks to prepare. You're going to see some different wrinkles. They're going to make some adjustments, and they want to do that. They're not going to give you the same look. How they prepare for Philly is not going to be how they prepare for Tennessee or Pittsburgh or anybody else.
Can we go ahead and assume that Belichick has got something like that for this game? Something
I would
that he
say.
Has not shown the entire season
I would say.
That he's saving for
but
this
it's
game.
In the playbook. It's
right.
something that's
right.
in the playbook. They don't go in and just make up plays. It's been in the playbook, but like I said, it's game specific.
Talking to William McGinnis for a couple of more moments. Now, you've played with Tom Brady. You've watched Tom Brady for a long time. Where does that fourth quarter comeback in the AFC Championship game rank in your mind?
It's one of the top, and I expect it from Tom. At some point, he's such a student of the game, and Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, does a great job. But they're so in tune of what teams are doing. If you stay the same, and I keep saying this, you know, I said it last week, if Jacksonville stays the same, they'll figure it out. And they'll go in at halftime, and they're going to make adjustments. They're going to make in-game adjustments, but they're going to make adjustments at halftime. They're going to give you certain looks to see what you're in, to test you with certain things, and they're going to try to attack. If you take away something, like Gronk took away himself because of the injury, Barry Church hit, then they give you a whole different look. So now the game plan changes, and they're going to make you adjust. If you can't adjust, if you can't make in-game adjustments, you're going to struggle.
What about Gronk? Do you expect him to be the Gronk that we know come Sunday? And then defensively, you know, enough. We already know how do you beat Tom Brady. We know what you have to do. You got to get to Brady.
Right.
You got to pressure him. You got to do it with four guys. You got to hit him. What do you do about Gronk? How do you defend Gronk?
It's tough. They haven't figured it out yet. And, you know, and he's a great player. He's his size. He's monstrous. He's big. He's long. He's agile. When he's going up gracefully for the football, he's a blocker. They can use him in multiple sets. They use him in multiple positions on the field in formation. So they do a lot with him. He affects their offense a lot. And if you put a smaller guy, of course, you don't have a shot. Put a linebacker, then maybe not be fast enough or more agile in space to keep up with him. You try to double him, they're going to find somebody else. If you take him away, they're going to pick you apart with somebody else. You're going to leave somebody else one-on-one. So, I mean, you got to pick your poison. Like any other great offensive coordinator, you got to put your pieces in place.
We're talking to William McGinnis. You mentioned Mike Vrabel. You played with him. The two of you were teammates.
Yep.
You played extremely well together. If anything else, he was known for his toughness, man. That
he
dude
is
was
tough.
Tough. He is really tough.
And smart.
And smart.
Very smart.
All right, so if you're a head coach the way he is right now, can you coach or teach that toughness? Or if you don't have that by the time you get to that league, it's just not there?
Ooh, I don't think you can make guys tough.
Right.
I don't think you can teach that. I think that could be one of your selling points. We want a tough football team. And if you take it back to Bill Cowher, who was Vrabel's coaches, and Bill Belichick, they was able to create that. But you got to go out and get those type of players. And I think when you look at the Tennessee Titans, they have a core group of guys that are generally tough, good football guys, right? They got a good defense, a tough front up seven. They pound the football in the running game. They got a tough personality when you go out throughout the roster. So you have players like that. Now, the other way you create is you got to bring your type of player in through free agency, through the draft and all that. So you got to identify guys when you implement a system and see, do these guys fit my system? Do these guys, character-wise, are they going to be the type of guys that I want? Can these guys change from week in to week out and be able to handle the pressure I'm going to put on them? That's the smart part of it. So there's a lot of things and a lot of evaluations he's going to have to make, but here's a guy with a high football IQ. He'll be able to handle it.
Well, one last thought. You've got a high football IQ as well. And since I've known you since USC, and I would talk to you then, I ultimately knew about your intellect and what you brought to it and your work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm really proud of you as a broadcaster.
Thank you.
However, you work at this.
I do.
You treat this as a job and a career.
Yeah.
And you're not just showing up with the rings. And I'm like, hey, I'm William McGinnis.
I don't have any on today.
Okay, so you're doing a job. What's it like when you go and you talk to the Pats? I mean, you're a part of that brotherhood. You were in the trenches, bleeding, sweating, going to battle. I mean, if anybody's welcome there, it's you. But now you're on the other side and you've got a job to do. Are you still one of them?
I am. I'm lucky.
So what's it like for you to
do that?
Well,
it's not just the Patriots. And, you know, I love to put that out there. I go to a lot of different teams, and I want the respect from the teams. And I'm still loyal to the process and understanding that there's certain things that you can see and we can talk about that's just going to stay between me and you. But also when they give me information and they allow me into their locker rooms and practices and meetings and different things like that, it gives me a better sense of what they're trying to do. So when I go on air, I don't say, hey, the defensive coordinator from this team told me they're going to run this front, they're going to do this against that team. I base that on my film work and my study and what I've been doing, and it gives me a better sense of what they're trying to do. So I know what direction I'm going in, so I'm not going opposite and I'm not looking stupid on TV. But it's great insight, and I love that. I love being around the game. Playing the game, it allows me to understand what teams are trying to do, and it puts me back in there like one of the guys. Like when we're having a football conversation, it's two football players talking or a coach to player talking. It's not me, the analyst, going in. And I just gather information because I like to increase my knowledge of the game. I like to continuously learn the game of football because it constantly changes. The basics and fundamentals and techniques don't, but the game does change a little bit.
Of course, I'm talking about Greg Olsen. Greg, it's good to see you again. How are you?
It's good to be on, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Now, you've been doing some analyst work in the build-up to the Super Bowl on Sunday, which is the second time you've done that this season. What has that experience been like for you?
It's been great. Being able to call that broadcast, call that game earlier in the season on my bye week was a very unique and new experience for me. You know, I hadn't really had much practice at it. I did one dry run out in L.A. a couple years back, but it was kind of cool to see the game from that side, to see just how much work these production crews and these broadcasters do leading up to a game. And I know not everybody was thrilled with me being, you know, right down the street to watch the Vikings game, but at the end of the day, I think it was a positive experience.
By the way, what was your reaction to that? That everybody was not thrilled to see you right down the street?
We never imagined, when we signed up for that last summer leading into the season, we never imagined it would be controversial at all. We thought it would kind of be received as kind of a unique and a cool thing to have an active player call a game during the season. And I think once it was over and everyone kind of caught their breath and realized like what it was all about, I think it was received pretty positively outside of a handful of Vikings fans.
Greg Olsen joining us. Have you heard any of that from any of them walking around the mall today?
No, everybody's been cool. They got after me a little bit when I was up in the booth doing the game. A couple people noticed, like, the press box was right behind them. So a couple guys, as the game was going on, were... But it was all in good fun, and we played them a couple weeks later, and all was good.
These people are nice. This is a very, very nice part of the country right here. Now, the Super Bowl is going to likely feature Gronk and Zach Ertz making significant contributions at your position. As a tight end, what kind of thoughts do you have when you watch these two guys play, and what advice would you give a D coordinator to try to stop them or at least slow them down?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool to see two offenses. I think it's the first time in the Super Bowl history that two offenses are led, you know, the receiving leaders are their tight ends. And it's kind of a new thing. There's, you know, a lot of teams, you know, Kelce and Kansas City is really where the starting point of that offense. And, you know, you can go across the league. And it's kind of cool to see the tight end position be such a marquee, you know, kind of matchup in this at this level. So, you know, starting with Gronk, I don't know if you can ever stop him. I don't know if you're ever going to take him away. I think you got to limit his catches, and you got to limit the impact of his catches. You know, it can't be 3rd and 10 and you give him a 20-yard seam. You know, you got to get off the field. Give him his catches on 1st and 2nd down. Try to contain him in the red zone, and, you know, just hope his production aren't, you know, back-breaking plays.
Greg Olsen joining me on the set here on Radio Row. And after your season was over, Ron Rivera made some changes on the offensive side of the ball. That meant that Mike Shula and Ken Dorsey were let go. You know it's a business. You understand that. But at the same time, there are personal relationships. What was it like to see the two of them leave?
It's hard, you know, and the first reaction is always the personal one. It's always the disappointment. You know, I've been through it a few times where you've had coaches you were close to, and you can't help but have that guilt where, I wish there was something more I could have done to let them keep their job and whatnot. You know, I've known Dorse. When I went on my official visit to Miami back as a senior in high school, my host, Eric Winston, took me to Dorsey's house, you know, a couple weeks before the national championship game. And so I've known him for a long time. I've known Shula. We came to Charlotte together on the Panthers in the same year back in 2011. So it's always hard, but, you know, moving forward, as you said, it is a business. You know, obviously, North Turner's reputation and resume speaks for itself. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with the offense.
And listen, when it comes to that sort of thing, he might be the best in the business. You've already spoken to him, right?
I have.
So what was that conversation like, and how excited are you about his offense?
I am. You know, I've met Norv over the years, obviously playing against them and, you know, just at various stops, but never really formally, you know, met him, had a long conversation. So we just sat down and kind of just introduced ourselves to each other, kind of gave a base, you know, overview of kind of how he sees things and some of my feedback from being around. So it was really positive. You know, his work with tight ends, his work with offenses, again, speaks for itself. And,
you know, I think he's going to be good for my career. I think he's going to be good for our offense. And I think guys are excited for the spring to see how it all comes together.
Change is part of the business. Injury is part of the business. You had a broken foot that limited you to 7 games this year. You understand what you signed up for. It doesn't make it any easier. What's it like to go through something like that?
Yeah, it was my first time. You know, I missed the first 2 games my rookie year in 07, and I played every single game since then. I hadn't missed a game in 10-plus years, so now to all of a sudden, you know, have a significant injury that required surgery and required me being out, as you said, you know, 8-9 weeks, it was a whole different perspective for me to be, you know, standing on the sidelines during games, traveling but not preparing to play, spending all your time in the rehab doing treatment, and it's not what I was used to. But I also think it was a little bit of a refresher. I think it gave me some good perspective of just how lucky I have been in my career to have such longevity and relative health. So I'm excited for a new offseason. I feel great. I'm looking forward to getting back into my routine and getting my body back to where I want it to be for another year.
Now give me 1 second. I want to lay this out, because in your second game back after the injury, you had 9 receptions, 116 yards and a touchdown. Your fellow tight end Ed Dixon said after the game, this is a quote, "I could have broken out in tears. I know how hard he worked, how hard he rehabbed, how it hurt him not to be out there for us, but he was still there for us. He was the main reason I was having success. His positive outlook and his film study carried over to the things I did," end of quote. And that's an amazing thing for a teammate to say. What's your reaction when you hear that and hear a teammate being so happy for you and then to have the game that you had coming back?
You know, it means a lot. We're very fortunate. We got great teammates. I got great guys. Ed being at the top of the list. He's a guy we're hoping that we can keep. He did such a good job filling in, and more than just filling in. He earned that role to be the starter in my absence, and wasn't just a place filler. You know, he had a significant role in our offense. He had 175 yards against the Lions on the road. I mean, he's a really good player, but you know, that's kind of something I've always tried to pride my career on, is impacting the team, impacting the game more with just production, more than just catches. There's so much more to playing on an NFL team than just what can you do on the field, you know, how you deal with players in the locker room. I remember what it was like being a young player and having Brian Urlacher put his arm around me as a rookie to just teach me the way. I remember those days like they were yesterday. So now to be the old player, you know, I feel like there is a responsibility for guys to set the tone on the team of how things should be done, how guys should prepare. Your attitude, how you come to work. There's just so many layers to what it means to being a part of an NFL locker room.
So many layers to what it means to be a part of an NFL locker room and also an NFL player, and then you have everything off the field. You're a finalist for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. That's the second year in a row. What's that honor mean to you?
It means a great deal. I played in Chicago for 4 years. I saw firsthand what the Payton family and Walter specifically meant. Was a teammate in college of Jarrett, Walter's son. I've known him for a long time, known the family. You know, we're very passionate about our work. We went through a tough time with our son a few years ago. He went through a real struggle with his heart when he was born with a heart condition that required a series of open heart surgeries and subsequent care. Following that, you know, episode, my wife and I started The Hardest Yard, which is what has inspired this partnership with Microsoft that we're talking about today. We provide free in-home privatized nursing care and therapy care into the homes of these cardiac kids, and because of the devices like the Surface and their software, our nurses that we pay that go into the home immediately can input vitals and all the medical data, and immediately gets uploaded to the cardiologist and the Children's Hospital in Charlotte in real time. It's really been a game changer, and this cause has become, I couldn't tell you how big of a part of our life it's become. And now to have your efforts rewarded on this platform with the Walter Payton Man of the Year finalist, I never imagined 6 years ago what a big part of our lives philanthropy would be.
And the Microsoft program we're talking about is the Create Change program, which Greg just mentioned. What about your son, TJ? How is he now?
He's doing well. He's had a rough road. He's had 3 open heart surgeries. He's had multiple. He lives with a pacemaker that he's had replaced a few times. He takes medicine every 8 hours, but if he ran on this set right now, you would never know. He's a happy boy. He has some limitations here and there. He's very smart, does great in school, plays on his big brother's basketball team, and he's out there. And sometimes we have to remind ourselves that 6 years ago, we didn't know if he would even be out there. So however many baskets he scores or goals he scores, we're not too worried. The fact that he's out there with a smile on his face, keeping up with all the other kids is all that matters.
Can I tell you, he sounds like the bravest kid in the world. He sounds like an absolutely awesome kid.
He is. He's a special kid. He's really embraced. He calls it his special heart. He knows how much we try to help what he calls his heart friends. It's been an unbelievable life experience to go through as a father, as a husband. and looking at life through his eyes. It's been amazing.
Good for you. It's got to be so challenging, but so rewarding on so many different levels. If people want more information about your foundation, they want to get involved, how do they go about doing it?
They can go to our website. All the information is there, www.r4r.org, the number 4r4r.org. And any way they want to help, donate, events, causes, it's all right there.
A two-time NFL MVP, a four-time Pro Bowler, a Walter Payton Man of the Year recipient.
All right, all right. Let's get to the interview. Let's go.
Oh, man, you've had a really good life, Kurt Warner.
I have.
Yeah, you may be embarrassed and you have places to go, but you have a really nice resume. Let me just say this. We can see you throughout the NFL networks more than 85 hours.
I know.
Of live Super Bowl coverage, Super Bowl Sunday, a special 8.5-hour edition of the Oof. NFL Network's NFL Game Day morning starting at 9 a.m. And, Kurt, if you think that's something, I got to start you off with this. Now, you and I have covered this before. This is a tweet that I received. Quote, here's the note, Jim. Just have Alvy print it, and when Kurt gets close enough, put it in his pocket. Dear Kurt, I like you. Do you like me? Check one. Yes, no, Sarah T. in Providence. Kurt, I don't know if you know Salty Sarah. She is a listener to my program. She loves you.
Oh, yeah? Well, love you too, Sarah. I'm all for that.
Can you check yes or no?
I'll check yes. You got it.
There it is.
I'm in.
All right, Sarah, stop bringing it up. You already got there. All right, Kurt, let me start you off first with the news from yesterday, the reports that Alex Smith is on his way to Washington. You had said this for quite some time. There would be teams interested in Alex Smith. What do you think about that move for the Redskins?
Well, this is an interesting one to me, that I knew Alex would be in high demand. And I think Alex, I don't think he gets the credit he deserves as the kind of quarterback he is. But I look at the situation in Washington, and I look at Kirk Cousins, and I look at Alex Smith, and I say, when you look at them and you look at their careers, what would you say about them? You would say, oh, they've won football games. They've shown they can do everything on the football field. What they haven't done is won the big game. But you would say the same thing about both of them. And so that was the interesting thing to me is what do you feel you're getting from Alex Smith that you didn't have with Kirk Cousins? Unless it was simply, we don't feel like we're going to be able to sign Kirk Cousins to a long-term deal, so let's go find the next guy. But very interesting to me is that I'm not sure it's the greatest situation for Alex Smith when I look at the team that they have as a whole, when I look at the division that he's going to be playing in. Yet I think Kirk Cousins may have hit the lottery. Is that Alex Smith is off the market now. He goes to your old team. Now you get a chance to pick where you want to go. There's going to be a lot of teams in need. There's going to be some good situations out there. And the other thing I look at too, Jim, and as a quarterback, I look at, okay, I want to win championships, right? So I don't want to go to the NFC. Forget the NFC. I mean, Alex Smith now has to play against Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, twice a year apiece for a long time. You got to go through Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan and all those guys in the NFC. In the AFC, you got Tom Brady, who's 40, and you got Big Ben, who's in his high 30s. Who else you got? I mean, who else is that young quarterback that you say, man, I'm really worried about him? If I'm Kirk Cousins, I'm going, let me find the best AFC situation. Jacksonville, if they decide not to go with Bortles again. What a great situation with a lot of young talent. Denver, if they can keep that together. Those are the situations I look at and say, man, I want to have a chance to compete for a championship. And the best way to do that is to go to the AFC where you don't – I mean, you have some great quarterbacks, but you don't have as many as you're going to have to compete against every single year like the NFC does.
And that's why he is Kurt Warner breaking that thing down. And by the way, because he bet on himself every single year, he's going to get paid too.
No doubt about it.
Not only can he choose pretty much where he wants to go and his situation, he's going to get paid. One thought about Kirk Cousins. When you talk about Alex Smith maybe not getting the respect that he deserves, what about Cousins? Does he get about as much respect as he deserves, or does he deserve more?
Well, again, I think this is a hard one because the one thing about Alex Smith is he's shown he can really win in the regular season. I mean, nobody's won more in the regular season over the last 5 or 6 years than Alex Smith. I think that's the one knock on Kirk Cousins is that he shows you physically he's got all the skills. He can do all of that. He just hasn't won enough. And I think that's why he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. And, you know, you sit back and you look and you go, okay, is it because he doesn't have the talent around him?
That's what I'm going to ask you.
Or is it because he doesn't have that
something that puts him over the top and allows him to win some of those games that great quarterbacks have to win. And I don't know the answer to that. It's hard to say until we're going to see. We're going to put him in a situation where he's going to have some more talent, and we're going to find out. But physically, I mean, I watch him on tape, you know, every week, and I see things that he does that I say there are only a handful of quarterbacks in this league that can make that read or that can make that throw. So I know he's special from a physical standpoint, but it's the mental thing that always separates the good from the great, and we're going to get a chance to see if he's that guy.
Hall of Famer Kurt Warner joining us. What about Jacksonville? That is so interesting what you just said. I mean, have they seen enough? Is Blake Bortles the guy there, or maybe are they still not sure?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, I haven't seen enough. I know they got all the way to the AFC Championship game this year. But again, when I talk about a franchise quarterback, I'm talking about a guy I'm paying $20 million a year and I'm building around. I want a guy I can believe I can put the game on his right arm and he will win games for me. I don't think Blake Bortles has shown that, although he made some strides, did some really good things this year. And I thought, you know, interesting example was when you watched, you know, the two championship games. And Jacksonville's ahead, 14-10, minute to go in the game, or minute to go in the half, you take a knee. You don't say, hey, I believe my quarterback can go get me points that I'm going to need against Tom Brady. I'm taking a knee. Now, a lot of ways to look into that. Now I'm going to go to the other side, and you got a 21-7 lead for Philadelphia with Nick Foles, who hasn't played very many games, less than a minute to go in the half. Why not just take a knee? You're up two touchdowns. Forget it. We're going to get points. Nick Foles leads them down, gets them a field goal to keep that momentum, to build a little bigger lead and put a little more pressure on Minnesota. And I thought that was really telling about those two situations and the confidence level you have in your quarterback, not just to make plays, but not to mess it up. And that, to me, when you're talking about a franchise quarterback, you have to believe that that guy can make plays for you, but also that he's not going to screw it up for you. And I'm not sure that Jacksonville believes that about Blake Bortles. So I'm not ready to pay a guy $20 million. I mean, that's a lot of money for a guy if you're not sure. Now, maybe they know more than we do. Maybe they saw more than we thought they did, and they believe he's the guy of the future. But I look at that team and I say, man, we are young. We are talented. We are a quarterback away from competing every year for an AFC championship. If I have a chance to go get Kirk Cousins as opposed to Blake Bortles and pay him similar money, who do you take?
I'm taking Cousins. I don't think that's really that hard of a decision myself.
Right.
But Bortles definitely played better than I would have expected coming in. But with that defense and with that running attack,
yes,
I would trust Kirk Cousins more than Blake Bortles. You mentioned Nick Foles. Well, you talk about trusting QB2. This guy has made unbelievable strides since the regular season. When you watched him take over after the Rams game, how much has he grown into this role? And then how much has that offense evolved and changed around him over the last several weeks?
Well, I just think he's gotten more comfortable. I think what we saw, and even early in the games that he played in the regular season, you saw a lot of good things. You saw a lot of good throws. But I also felt like I saw a guy that was a little uncomfortable in the system. I felt like it was an offense that was trying to feel their way around. They weren't calling plays and being as aggressive as they were with Carson Wentz, and it's all understandable. And I just think they've grown together. And I don't know if there was something about that bye week where they had a little extra time to get a little better feel for each other, but I think they've really kind of fit what Nick Foles does here in the playoffs, that they've really come into, this is what he's good at, this is what we're going to try to do, we're going to continue to expand the offense. And I just saw great confidence in a play caller in their quarterback in the NFC Championship game, calling flea flickers, you know, calling that play with, you know, that big play to Ertz that set up the field goal at the end of the first half. That had 23 seconds on the clock, and they were well on their side of the 50-yard line. So I'm just seeing going, oh, okay, maybe we have a little more here than we thought we did, and they're expanding that. And I think they're going to need all of that if they're going to have a chance to really compete on Sunday.
Hey, listen, they were not just running RPOs for him.
Exactly.
He was airing it out. He was throwing it downfield. It's Tom Brady's 8th Super Bowl. He knows exactly what he's getting into. Nick Foles has never been here before. Is that a disadvantage, or is there something to the idea that maybe he benefits from the fact that he doesn't know what he doesn't know?
Well, what he does know is that Tom Brady's on the other sideline.
Right.
That's what he does know. He does know that Tom Brady came back from 25 points. And again, saying Tom Brady, but the Patriots came back from down 25 a year ago to win the Super Bowl. He knows that sort of stuff. And so even though he might not know what the experience of the Super Bowl, this is for all the marbles, and I'm playing against the greatest quarterback that's ever played. And that in and of itself is going to bring anxiety, nervousness, and it's going to make you think about certain situations differently. And that's the only thing, and the advice I would give Nick Foles is treat every situation as its own situation and let the game come to you. You know Tom Brady's over there, and instead of, you know, maybe passing on a tight throw, you go, oh, I got to make that throw because I got to beat Tom Brady. And you make a bad decision based on thinking who's on the other sideline. Or vice versa, where you come in and go, man, I can't throw that tight window because I may make that one mistake that costs us and we lose the Super Bowl. And now I'm going to play tentative early in this game. And now Tom Brady's going to lap you and you're not going to be able to win that game. And so to me, it's try to get in the moment and treat every situation. What you see, trust it and rip it. If you don't do that in this game, you're going to make too many mistakes one way or another. And against Tom Brady and the Patriots, you can't make those kind of mistakes to win. So you say you don't know what you don't know, but he's going to know enough that if it gets into his head, it could affect the way he plays.
Kurt Warner is my guest for another moment or so. If you're a betting man, how about your guy Larry Fitzgerald? Do you think that he comes back next season?
I do think he's coming back. And I think there may still be some things to be figured out here. You know, who's going to be their quarterback? Can they go get Kirk Cousins? Or what's the situation there? I don't know if he's had a sit-down with Steve Wilks yet or not. I think the man and what they're trying to build will pay dividends on whether he comes back. But just when I talked to him through the season, I really felt like I got the sense I can still play at a high level. I can still be effective. I still want to have a chance to compete for a championship. So all that stuff lent me to think he's not quite done mentally to say, oh, I'm just ready to walk away. That he wants to play a little bit more and thinks that he can at a high level. So barring, I think, a crazy situation or maybe them not being able to find a quarterback where he feels comfortable that they could be, you know, successful the next couple years, I do think Larry comes back.
Kurt, I got about 30 seconds. I talked to Steve Wilks last week. I could not have been more impressed. Who am I? I'm a media guy. Have you spoken to him yet, and what do you think?
You know, I actually just sent a text congratulating him. I look to meet with him in the near future, but I have talked to a number of guys. I talked to Thomas Davis, who was on our set a couple weeks ago, and I was asking him the same thing because there were rumors that he might get the job. And everybody I've talked to has rave reviews about this man and how he commands a room, how he gets the attention and what he knows about football. So I think it's a great hire.
Jerry Kramer. Jerry, it's so good to see you. How are you?
Hey, Jimmy. I'm doing fine. And great to see you again, and great to be with you.
It's good to have you here. Now, every time I get to see you, it is special, but this time it feels a little bit different. It feels a little more special. You are one of the two senior finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2018. Can you take me back to when the announcement was made? What kind of emotions, Jerry, did you feel when you heard that news?
Well, I've taken the stance that I'm not really going to pay a lot of attention to everything now. I used to ride it up and down, and so I really didn't know that they were having a meeting about the finalists. And I'm in a restaurant having lunch with a friend of mine, and I get a call from Wisconsin. Congratulations. For what? Your nomination. To what? It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Are you kidding me? Wow. That's cool. And so it was kind of out of the blue, but it did give my heart a little pity-pat. And I felt pretty good about it.
Now, you were a senior finalist back in 1997, so in a sense, you've been through this week before. Hey, look, I don't want to jinx anything, Jerry, but I got to ask the question, what's the week like? Are you able to enjoy this week, or are you thinking about this thing every hour?
Well, Jimmy, it's kind of a continuation, I think, of my attitude over the years. I had decided, I got my little lip out, and I pouted, and I've said I was never going to accept anything from those guys, and, you know, I got a little hissy fit. And a few years later, I said, you know, the game's been awful good. You've had a lot of wonderful experiences and a lot of wonderful guys you've met and people along the way. And if you don't get into the big dance, it's still been 100 presents that you've received. So maybe we ought to chill out a little bit and not get so involved in whether we get in there or not, right? And so pretty much I took the nomination this time as a singular event. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm going to have fun with it. It's going to be a flattering, wonderful experience. If I get in, great. If I don't get in, great. But in the quiet of the night, I think about that cherry on top of the sundae, completing the picture. And it would certainly complete my life to be inducted.
Green Bay Packer Jerry Kramer. Green Bay Packer, great. You answered my next question. I was going to say, any idea what that's going to feel like if you find out on Saturday night that you were going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
No, I used to be awful excited on Christmas morning when I was about 6-7 years old, and maybe some of those childlike emotions will return. But I really have tried not to visualize that and think about it, and I'm trying to stay cool and calm and collected and prepare either way. So I don't think about it more than 10,000 times a day. So we'll see.
I hope so. I got a good feeling about it. I got a really good feeling about it, but then I think it should have happened a long time ago. So we'll see. Fingers crossed. It's the 50th anniversary, Jerry, of the Ice Bowl. 50th anniversary took place a few weeks back. I know you were at the screening of a documentary made by Don Meredith's son about that game. What was it like for you to see the documentary, and then what kind of memories do you have about that day?
First of all, Michael Meredith is a very nice young man, and I really enjoyed his father. His father and I were pals. His father helped me with an alter ego that helped advise me. I didn't have one, and he had one that he was no longer using. So his alter ego was named Harley Smedlap, and he was with the law firm of Smedlap, Smedlap, and Smedlap.
Wow.
And he gave me Harley. So whenever I got in a tough situation after that, Harley had helped me out. So I love Don Meredith, and I love his son. He's a sweet young
Jerry,
man.
Can I jump in? Tell me about Harley. I know Jerry. Tell me about Harley. What was his deal?
Later. We'll talk later about Harley.
<All right.
laughs> He did keep me out of trouble. Michael came to Green Bay to interview us and visit, and we chatted a lot about his pop, whom I really admired and loved a lot, and how difficult his life was to be 3 seconds from a championship and 13 seconds from a championship, virtually one play, and two more championships, Don Meredith would have been in the Hall of Fame, right? So it affected him, it affected the whole family, and a lot of that was reflected in the Ice Bowl film, and it was a Dallas look at the Ice Bowl film. But Michael handled it so well. There were maybe 300 or 400 Packer fans in the auditorium when we watched the film. Michael went up to the podium to say a few words, and they just came up in a roaring standing ovation for him. And he's trying to say something, and they won't stop.
Wow.
And they continue to applaud for about 5 minutes, and tears start rolling down his eyes, and it was just a wonderful expression from the Packer fans about how they felt about the film. So it was something that I enjoyed and something I know Don would have enjoyed.
Jerry Kramer, my guest, you know I never get tired of asking you about the block, the famous block that you made on Jethro Pugh. Now, you've been studying him for previous games. You knew that first move that he made was always up. What was your approach to making that block?
Jimmy, I was scratching my feet around looking for traction of some kind. My left foot found a divot, much like a golf divot, and it kind of sunk into that divot, and I tested it a little bit, and it felt really good, so I pushed off that left foot. Bob Skoronski, our left tackle, who had made a great block on George Andre from the 11-yard line down to the goal line, fell flat on his face. He took one step and went down. Gail Gillingham had his feet in the air. Forrest Gregg, both of his soles of his feet were showing. So it was I got a great start because of that divot. And I focused on Jethro's chest. I want to put my face in his chest, eyes open, head up, coming after him. I got to believe that he's going to do the same thing this time as he's done the former 3 weeks. So I anticipate him being high. And when he came up and I got into him, I'm in a leverage position. He has no shot. from that point on. So Jethro ends up 3-4 feet in the end zone. And so I turn around looking for Bart. I see Bart and I take a big sigh and okay, we got it done.
I was going to say, okay, so was there joy? Was there relief or just a feeling of a job well done? When you make a block like that, a block of a lifetime.
Kind of a responsibility. You know, everybody elevated their performance on that drive. I mean, we started that drive 65 yards from the end zone. Donnie Anderson made some great plays. Gilly made some great plays. Chuck Mersine, Boyd Dowler, Bob Skoronski, Forrest Gregg, everybody out there elevated their performance. Previous 31 plays, we gained a minus 9 yards. So the whole second half. Now, what makes you think you can go 65 yards with 4 minutes? Something that Lombardi put into us, or something that it was from another time? You know, maybe a testosterone boost, maybe a hormone boost of some kind. But that whole team elevated the performance and went 65 yards. And that was probably the highlight of my football career and the proudest thing I've ever done.
Jerry Kramer, Green Bay Packer, great, joining us for a few more moments. And you know, isn't it funny? People always talk about the 50th anniversary of the Ice Bowl. They're not talking about the anniversary of the Super Bowl or Super Bowl II. It's always that game. It's always the Ice Bowl. And then there's that famous photo of you carrying Vince Lombardi off the field and after beating the Raiders. What do you remember about that moment? A very, very, very famous photo.
Well, let me go back 1 week before that,
yes.
2 weeks before that, Jimmy, after the Ice Bowl. Coach Lombardi had a very vicious article written in Esquire about him, calling him a Mussolini and all kinds of derogative terms. And his mother had got a copy of the magazine and was crying over the article and very upset. So I thought, well, I will find a way to say something if I get a chance. Tom Brookshire came over to do a little interview, and he said, Jerry, what about Coach Lombardi? There's been a lot of controversy about him, you know, a lot of people saying different things. What do you guys think about him? And I says, Brookie, those people don't know Coach Lombardi. They have no idea who he is or what he's all about. We know him, we understand him, and we love him. This is one beautiful man. And Jimmy, you think about it, he was a religious man. He was a learned man. He studied ancient Greek. He taught physics and calculus. He had a great emotional package. He had personal integrity. There was a restaurant that opened in Green Bay, and the owner asked that the African-American players not visit his restaurant. So Coach Lombardi went down there and said, that's not a problem. Hell, no, nobody's coming to your restaurant, ever. If I see a player in here, they're going to be suspended or they're going to be fined. So you don't have to worry about the African-American fellas. You don't have to worry about any Green Bay Packer.
Amazing.
In that kind of integrity. So you asked me about the moment on the sidelines of Sports Illustrated cover. I'm doing instant replay at the time, and I've got my tape recorder in the locker room, so we tape the pregame stuff, and then we come in at halftime, and I turn it on, and we tape some stuff, come in at the end of the game, and I turn it on, so I'm very aware of everything that's going on. And I suggest to Bob Skoronski and Forrest Gregg, or Willie Davis, our two captains, that they carry Coach Lombardi off the field. This may be his last game, and he'd said something during the week that gave me that thought. And he needs to be carried off the field on the shoulders of his men. That's the way it should be. And Ski is lost somewhere. I don't know what happened to him. Willie's on the field because the defense is out there. So we're standing there, and Coach Lombardi walks out on the field about 25 or 30 feet, and he's going across the field. And Forrest says, Jerry, quick, let's get him. Okay. So we grabbed him, and as Forrest said later, same old stuff, Jerry. You got his face, I got his back end. So, but it was a short ride, but there was a moment of communication between us. And somebody asked me to caption that a couple years ago, and I said if there was any words spoken, it would have been from Coach Lombardi, I told you we could do it. And I would have said, you were right, Coach. You were right about everything.
Jerry Kramer, I'm so glad, Jerry, that you walked me back and told that story the way that you did. That's beautiful. You're working with Blimpy this week. It's a Radio Row tradition. What are you doing with the folks with Blimpy?
I'm pumping Blimpy. I'm a big Blimpy man myself, and my son Matthew is a big Blimpy man, and I have to hide the Blimpies from Matthew when I come home. But it's a wonderful sandwich. I mean, you can order a 48-inch piece, right, sandwich. You can let Mama set the table and set the plates and drinks and go in the living room and watch the game. And the guy, people can cut off 6 inches, 8 inches, 12 inches. In Fuzzy's case, 36 inches. So it's a great product, and I'm pleased to be a part of them, and they make a wonderful sandwich.
They absolutely do. And, Jerry, I can't say how happy I am to see you. At this point, I don't know what to say other than I have such admiration and respect. I have a love for you. I am thinking very good thoughts this week.
Thank you.
I think things are going to go well. I don't want to jinx anything, but I think it's your time finally, and it's about time. It is so good to see you, Jerry. Thanks so much. Have a great, great week.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Always enjoy you. Always enjoying with you. And I've got a great feeling about you also.
Good.
Thank you.
Kareem Hunt is my guest. Kareem, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm great. You know, enjoying this time right now.
Man, you should be having the year you had. But let me ask you this. Specifically, are you enjoying this time right now? I'm talking about the Radio Row. You've been grinding this thing out for hours today. What's your experience been like on the row?
You know, definitely been grinding this thing out all day, probably since about 7:30 this morning. But, you know, it's a great experience, you know, getting to talk to everybody, meet new people, and, you know, just have fun with it.
That's the way to approach it. All right, now this time last year, you were still a few months away from being drafted. Now you're an NFL rushing champ. Now you're coming off your first Pro Bowl. What's the last year been like for you?
You know, it's been pretty crazy. You know, a lot of ups and downs. You know, I worked hard to get in this position that I'm at. And, you know, I couldn't thank, you know, my mom, you know, my coaches, you know, my college coaches, and, you know, definitely my agent. And those guys did a great job of helping me, you know, get in this situation. And then, man, I played in the Senior Bowl, too. I like to thank those guys for helping me out. And it's just been one crazy ride.
Kareem Hunt joining us. You know, so many people are partly responsible, largely responsible for where you are right now. I mean, are you, like, kind of living a dream? Like, damn, is this thing real? Or maybe is this what you expected?
I mean, yeah, pretty much. Sometimes I think, like, is this real? But, you know, I got a lot of confidence in myself. And, you know, it's kind of... You know, I got high expectations, so I kind of, you know, set the bar high for myself.
All right, and then you got the business, right? You find out soon enough. I mean, when you get that first paycheck, you know it's a business. And then when you see what happened last night, you know it's a business.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the trade of Alex Smith to Washington, what kind of thoughts did you have when you heard that?
You know, I was definitely shocked. You know, after the year he just had, he had his best, you know, season. And, you know, you can just tell it's definitely a business. And, you know, Alex is a great quarterback, you know, a great teammate. A great competitor, and he wants to win just as bad as anybody I know. And definitely, you know, I like having him on the team, but, you know, we definitely got a special cat behind him. Well, that's ready to step up now and be the number one guy.
Kareem Hunt, my guest, that special cat behind him, of course, Patrick Mahomes.
Yes, sir.
He's going to take over. Based on what you've seen from him so far, how do you think he's going to handle that role? And then what kind of expectations do you have for the offense with him starting?
I honestly don't think we're going to miss a beat, you know. I feel like Pat going to go out there and, you know, spread the field out. You know, he got a very strong arm. I feel like he can make almost any pass on the field, you know, from anywhere. The guy could throw off his back foot, you know, left foot, right foot, you know, with a guy holding on to him, you know, on a run. You know, this guy, he has a strong arm, and, you know, he's a big kid. He can break some tackles. And he's just one of those guys that you want on your team, and he's young.
Man, dude, I mean, athletically, he looks freaky. I mean, for a quarterback, he looks like he can do things that guys just can't do. What about that kind of it thing, that intangible thing? You know, he's going to ultimately have to lead from the front. Do you think he's got all that, too?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think he got all that. You know, Pat's one of my – he is, like, my best friend in KC. Like, you know, we hang out all the time. You know, me and him, real good pals, and – You know, I always go out to Top Golf with him, you know, after a game or something. We'd go hit some golf. And, you know, we'd compete in that. He'd start talking trash. And, you know, he actually beat me, though.
Yeah, so, and when it goes the other way, what do you have to say to him?
Oh, yeah. I told him I was going to get him, you know. pretty much, I wasn't a golfer until I got to Kansas City. Now I'm starting to get good, and he's starting to get nervous.
So, how good are you? You like golf?
Oh, yeah, I'm starting to like golf a lot. So,
what do you like about it?
You know, it's just, it's relaxing.
Yeah, man.
So it's real relaxing. You can just
hang
out.
It is, and it's not, though, right? There's some days where it's not relaxing at all.
You're right about that.
But there are some days where you can get off the field, get out of the facility, knock the golf ball around, talk a little junk.
On a nice day, yep.
That's it. We're talking to Kareem Hunt. And you went to the Pro Bowl, your first Pro Bowl. What was that experience like?
You know, it was a great experience. You know, I got to meet a lot of vets, you know, some older guys, and, you know, hear a lot about them. And, you know, I just did my job and just sat back and listened and then clowned around with those guys. And it was definitely a great experience, you know. Hopefully I'll be in a lot more of those, or, you know, win a couple, you know, Super Bowls.
Now, I would imagine you've got some guys that probably you want to kind of roll up on, pick their brain a little bit, but there were guys who were seeking you out. Like Le'Veon Bell, for instance, told you he likes your talent and his message to you. In fact, let me ask you the question. What was his message to you?
You know, his message to me was this, you know, pretty much, you know, just keep doing my thing. Don't, you know, you got to stay hungry and all that stuff, man. Don't get, like, you know, too comfortable. You got to keep going like you never made it. And that's what he pretty much told me.
Which you probably pretty much knew already.
Yeah.
Shady McCoy probably told you the same thing. Hey, yeah. Listen, but one of the traditions of the Pro Bowl is the vets like to prank the rookies. Von Miller claimed that he figured out your room. He put his stuff on your tab. Is it true? And did any of the other guys get anything with your name?
I mean, none of the other guys, but I don't know. He might have charged a mill or two on mine, but, you know, nothing crazy. So I let him live, but he better not let me catch him slipping.
when a guy like that does something like that, does that kind of piss you off a little bit, or do you kind of roll with it, or both?
I mean, it's cool. You know, it happens. It's, you know, it happens. So, you know, he plays for the Broncos. He just sour that they can't beat us.
That's what it's about, right?
Yeah, that's what it's about.
Hey, listen, one more change with the team. You got a new offensive coordinator in Eric Bieniemy. Now, let me tell you something. I've been in this game long enough. I used to interview him when he played the game. I don't even know if you remember or knew about him playing the game. Man, I loved Bieniemy. This guy's rap was so good, and he was so smooth. And that's just a media guy talking about a guy who played the game. How do you think he will do as offensive coordinator?
I think he'll do just fine. You know, Coach Bieniemy loves the game of football.
Yeah, man, he does.
You know, he loves it. He eats, sleeps, breathes football. And he going to take that very serious. He going to want to be, you know, the number one offense in the country. And so I already know how he is. He won't sleep until he has it down packed. And so I know him. He going to, you know, harp on us and get us going. And, you know, he's a great coach. So I'm excited to see where this takes us.
Does he talk about what it was like when he played? Have you ever seen any YouTube clip of when he played? Do you know anything about him as a running back?
Yeah, I know he was, I know he'd go out there and fight you. So.
Oh, dude, he'd fight, for
yeah,
sure, in a good way.
I know he'd go out there and fight, yeah, and definitely in a good way. And, you know, he's a great coach, and, you know, like I said, he got a lot of passion for the game.
Tell him Rome said what's up. I loved talking to him when he played. All right, so you're working with FedEx and the FedEx Aaron Ground NFL Players of the Year Awards.
Yeah.
What's the award all about, and how can the fans vote for it?
All right, well, the award is about, you know, the FedEx, you know, Ground Player of the Year, and pretty much it's me, Le'Veon, and Todd Gurley. All of us, you know, had great seasons. And, you know, you pretty much, you vote for me by going on Twitter and you type in Hunt, hashtag, you know, Aaron Ground. And then that's how you vote for it. And make sure y'all go vote for me because, you know, I like winning.
Dude, that's some pretty serious company. Gurley,
yeah.
Le'Veon Bell, and you, what would it mean for you to rip that hardware over those two guys specifically?
You know, it'll mean a lot. You know, it'll really be like a dream come true. You know, I like those guys' game. Both of them guys, you know, before I got in the NFL, I looked up to those guys and, you know, liked their style of play. And, you know, just seeing those guys, you know, have so much success at this level is just kind of crazy.
I think they said the same thing about you. One more thing. Le'Veon, have you ever seen a dude pick his spots and do it the way he does it?
Man,
how is that dude that patient?
I asked him about it, and I don't know how he do it, but it's kind of crazy. But, you know, it works for him, but, you know, some guys can't be that patient.
Deshaun Watson is my guest. Deshaun, really nice to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Good, good. Deshaun, I want to ask you first about something that went down last week at Pro Bowl practice. Your name came up when Michael Bennett was saying to a group of Pro Bowlers that, quote, you're one of the most athletic quarterbacks I've ever seen. Watson can be running with the ball on the ground like this and then get up and throw that bad thing about 90 yards, end quote. That's amazingly high praise. What's it mean to get that kind of respect from an opponent who's been in the NFL as long as he has?
It's awesome just to have that recognition from veteran guys like that, especially a guy like him who's seen so many quarterbacks and played against, you know, the best of the best. And to have him, you know, say that and mention it was, even at the Pro Bowl, where I could be thinking about or talk about anything, it was pretty impressive, pretty cool. So I like it and I enjoy it.
Deshaun Watson, my guest. You know, this time last year, you were getting ready for the draft, and you were still a couple of months from knowing where you would be playing and living. Now you're getting love from Pro Bowlers. The last year has not been without challenges, but when you look back, what have the last 12 months been like for you?
It's been good. It's been a little roller coaster here and there, a little bump in the road. But at the same time, the last 12 months has been very good for me in a learning basis, kind of growing up as a young man and as a professional, and being able to see so many different things and learn so much. I'm trying to take it and run with it and use every little advice that I get towards my life and my career.
We're talking to Deshaun Watson. I mean, and then your career starts in an unbelievable way. Houston drafts you. Your first start came on the road on a short week in Cincinnati. You had that electric moment with that 49-yard touchdown run. What do you remember most about that game?
I think that's the biggest part. That run right there, and then closing out the game at the end and getting the W. And then, of course, it was my birthday, so it was a great night with a great day overall. And, getting the first win, you know, my NFL career on the road was big and special, no matter how it comes.
I mean, Deshaun, did you feel any nerves at all going into that start? Or because you played on a big stage at Clemson, did you feel like you were prepared for that moment?
I felt like I was prepared for the moment. I felt like I was just going to go out there and really enjoy it. But it was just a different feel, you know, because we didn't have any tight ends, two running backs, two receivers. So everyone knew that when we throw the ball, it's going to go to D-Hop. If not, then we're running the ball. So,
yeah, but, I mean, still, you played seven games. You started six of them. You put up enormous numbers. You made it all look so easy. So I've got to know, what was the most challenging part of the transition from the college game to the NFL? I mean, is it the speed of the game or something else?
The speed of the game was one of the things, but I would probably say just the manage the quarterback, managing all the things that comes with it. All the unnecessary stuff that comes with, you know, starting at the NFL, the media, the hype, the different interviews, meetings you gotta go to, and just kind of controlling what you can control, and keeping life simple, and just going out there and performing and playing ball each and every week is the biggest thing. So I've experienced it a little bit in college, but not to this magnitude.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds great in theory, right? Easier said than done. How were you able to mitigate all that? How were you able to maintain and handle all that?
Just the support cast out around me, starting really with Coach OB, him giving me advice on how different players handle it, how he handled the media. That's one person that's always in the media and handling, you know, all the outside stuff more than anybody. So, learning from him and then from the veteran guys and just, you know, keeping my words short, you know, saying what needed to be said and focusing on, you know, just the football and the team.
We're talking to Deshaun Watson for a few more moments. You know, you're so used to being the guy. I mean, from a very early age, you're used to people looking at you and having expectations. So you've been a leader everywhere you've been, but still, this is the NFL. What was it like to step into the huddle as an NFL rookie and look around at you and see veterans and know that you have to lead these guys? Is that something you had to get used to, or is leading, and were you ready from day one?
I feel like I was ready for day one, but at the same time, like you said before, it was easier said than done. Whenever, you know, before you even get on a team, you're, you know, pretty much talking about I can lead, you know, a 34-year-old man with three kids. But once you step in that huddle, you feel that energy and pressure, you know, on the road, hostile environment, when the game's on the line, it's a whole different feel. So, I just kind of, you know, built myself and made sure I had positive energy the whole time, you know, during training camp and the games I was playing. So whenever I got in, it just kind of came natural.
Right? You got to lead these guys. And you're right. I mean, how do you lead a 34-year-old guy who's got kids when, other than being in that same huddle, you might have a lot, might not have a lot of things in common, or at least off the field. Hey, but exactly. Listen, what about the chemistry on the field, right? You've got incredible talent at wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller, Bruce Ellington. Even with that talent, though, it's supposed to take time to develop chemistry between a QB and a receiver. How were you guys able to get on the same page and develop that chemistry so quickly?
I think it just starts really off the field. I think people don't really realize the things you do off the field can lead to the chemistry on the field. And, you know, we might go out to eat. We might go to DeAndre's house and play cards. We might come to my house and play cards, or, you know, watch a different game here. And at the same time, while we're doing that, kind of socializing, we're talking about football. We're talking about different experiences and situations that popped up. And once we stepped on the field, it kind of came natural. And we kind of knew how we – everything I was thinking, they were thinking the same thing and seeing the same thing. So a lot of people don't realize off the field, you know, time really sets how it is on the field.
That makes sense. Deshaun Watson, my guest, for a couple of more moments. Head coach Bill O'Brien said that you're ahead of schedule. There's a possibility that you might be doing some work at OTAs in May. Is that the goal, and how good would it feel to be able to get back out there with your teammates?
Yeah, that's the goal, and we're on track and process for it. So it'll feel really good, because I missed, you know, half of the season. So being able to, you know, get the reps with the guys and just having that, you know, presence with everyone at the same time would be very, very special. And every rep counts, every play counts. So the much more I can do that will help us out in the season.
Deshaun Watson, my guest, he's representing Old Spice and the Red Collection of Premium Scents. What is your advice, Deshaun, to people listening right now who are looking to take their scent game to the next level?
Go get the new captain from the Red Collection of Old Spice. And you have to go buy the pricey bottles. You can just get it from Old Spice.
Thank you very much for listening, clones. You know I appreciate you. We're coming to you all week long from the Bold North before the Patriots and Eagles get it on Sunday. Keep coming back for more. We'll see you next time. I'm out.